Good day, and welcome to the TGS first quarter earnings release conference call. For information, this conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Robert Hobbs. Please go ahead.
Hello, and welcome to the TGS first quarter 2010 conference call. My name is Robert Hobbs. I'm CEO of TGS, and joining me today on this call is Karen Eltouille, Vice President of Business Development, and Frederick Edmondson, our Corporate Controller. Earlier today, we posted our first quarter 2010 earnings release, along with a recorded presentation of the results. I hope that you've had an opportunity to view that material, and we'll now give just a brief summary of the main points before opening the call to your questions. In the first quarter of 2010, our total net revenues of $148 million were up 109% compared to the same period 1 year ago. This marks a record high for TGS in Q1 revenues, primarily due to a significant increase in 3D activity, very high pre-funding levels, and a record Q1 late sales level for the company. Net late sales were $73.4 million, up 145%, and net pre-funding revenues were $69.6 million, up 102% from Q1 of 2009. Pre-funding revenues covered 72% of our investments in multi-client products, which totaled $96.2 million for the quarter. Our multi-client amortization rate for the quarter was 47% of net revenues. During Q1, a significant percentage of sales were from 3D projects in frontier basins that carry both high pre-funding and high amortization. Our resulting operating profit was $58.8 million, which is 40% of net revenues. Earnings per share were 40 cents a share, up from 13 cents per share in the first quarter of 2009. As a result of our significant acquisition activity on highly pre-funded surveys during the quarter, our backlog decreased 30% to $107.6 million in Q1. As of March 31st, TGS's cash holdings were $281.9 million, compared to $243.5 million at the end of 2009. Although not affecting our Q1 results, it is important to note that our wide azimuth work in the Gulf of Mexico has been influenced by the Deepwater Horizon tragedy on April 20th. The crew chartered to TGS assisted in the rescue efforts immediately after the incident, but returned to work on the Justice Project on April 21st after being released by the authorities. On April 30th, the authorities defined an exclusion zone over the major part of the spill that forced TGS to temporarily postpone operations at Justice. TGS mobilized the crew to a new wide azimuth project area adjacent to our existing wide azimuth library, but outside the area directly affected by the spill, and are continuing operations there. Management is continuously monitoring the situation, and it is our intention to return to the operations on Justice when it's safe to do so. I'm very proud of the performance of our employees during the quarter and their ability to deliver a strong start to 2010. As such, TGS management maintains its guidance for 2010. That guidance is multi-client investments between $270 and $300 million, average pre-funding in the range of 50 to 60% of investments, an average annualized multi-client amortization rate in the range of 37 to 43% of net revenues, and net revenues in the range of $500 to $600 million, of which approximately 5% will be from proprietary contract projects. At this time, we will open the call for your questions. Please press star 1 to pose your question.
Thank you. For information, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star or asterisk key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 to ask a question. We will pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal for questions. Our first question comes from Paul Dahl of First Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Just two questions, if I may. Firstly, I know it's early, as we do not know the real reason behind the Deepwater Horizon tragedy, but what kind of implications do you see or expect to see from this event in let's say, 1 year's time?
Yeah, you're right, Paul. It's very early. They haven't... they're investigating the incident right now. I think it's important to keep in mind that, 30% of the U.S. oil supply is supplied by the Gulf of Mexico. And, in particular, the area in which we have our wide azimuth coverage is the most productive portion of the deepwater Gulf of Mexico. So I think medium to long term after this incident, I think it's very clear that that area is going to continue to play a strong role in E&P in the U.S. So, it's our view that medium to long term, there's we don't expect there to be a significant impact to our activity. Obviously, once the investigation is complete of the incident, one might assume that there might be, new regulations that might be imposed on drilling operations, potentially. Again, it's very, very early to make that determination, but we just need to keep in mind that this basin, and in particular the area that that we're operating in, is probably one of the most important oil producing regions in the U.S.
Definitely. My second question is more on what kind of expectations can we see from, or do you have to the license round in Greenland from Q3? Is this related to farm outs following the awards, or how should we think about that?
Yeah, the round in Greenland, I guess, closed on May 1st, or several days ago. We are continuing to see activity with our Baffin Bay Library. Even after the round closes, we're getting inquiries from customers. It appears that there are continue to be discussions on partnerships. The Greenland, the Bureau of Minerals and Petroleum of Greenland received 17 applications for the 14 blocks that were up for license, and there were 12 international oil companies involved in those applications. So it sounds as if it was an extremely successful round for Greenland. It's obviously hard to quantify what direct impact, and we typically don't talk about direct sales on a project by project basis that we would expect. But I can just say that we're continuing to see activity on our Greenland data even after the round closed on May 1st.
Great, thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.
Our next question comes from Yavaha Hingorani of Standard Imports Equity Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. I don't mean to belabor the point, but just wanted to also get an idea of, for TGS, what delays in the Gulf of Mexico possibly mean in terms of late sales and future investment and pre-funding.
Yeah, so directly related to our operations, and as you know, we recognize revenue on a percent of completion basis as we acquire our surveys. So we have pre-funding and we have late sales that are associated with our justice program that are being postponed. Those revenues that are directly assigned to that one project are obviously being postponed until we can get back onto the project and recommence acquisition. But other than simply a delay in recognizing those revenues, there's no real immediate impact to us associated with that one project.
What I was trying to get an idea of was whether as part of the existing library or as a percentage of overall activity, what is that kind of account for, if you will, the Gulf of Mexico?
I mean, it's still it's still very early to tell what short-term impacts there will be. I think in terms of oil company activity, we have not heard anything concrete in terms of any changes being made to license rounds in the Gulf of Mexico. So those regular license rounds drive a lot of our late sales on our data library. It does not appear to us where we could put our finger on anything that's concrete, from this incident that we feel is going to significantly affect our business going forward.
Okay, great. And then can you just update us on the dividend? This is going to be decided upon, or has there been a next dividend date I'm not aware of in June, as well as what you might think of in terms of further uses of cash?
Sure. In February, our board came out and announced that they were going to propose to the annual general meeting a dividend payment of 4 kroner per share. That 2 kroner is a extraordinary or non-recurring dividend, and the other 2 kroner per share is designed to be sort of the start of a regular dividend policy going forward. So this proposal will be brought forward on June 3rd, I believe, is our annual general meeting, and the shareholders will vote on it. The ex-dividend date has been set for June 4th. So shareholders, as of June 4th, will participate in the dividend, and that dividend is scheduled to be paid on June 21st.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
Ole Martin of ABG has our next question. Please go ahead.
Hi, guys. I have a question on the justice-wide assessment survey. If you're not able to complete it this year, will you then have to revise your full-year guidance for 2010, or is it not significant?
It is a big project for us. I can envision a scenario by which, for some reason, if we weren't able to get back to the project and this year, and we're already significantly, and we're about 50% done with the project. We started in January. We're well, in fact, it's over 50% in terms of acquisition complete on it. We're well on our way to finishing it. We expect to be back on the project well in time to finish the project this year. So I can't envision the scenario happening in which we wouldn't be able to complete the project this year. We're constantly reviewing other projects if we didn't complete, if we were not able to complete justice, I can envision other projects coming to take its place in the year, simply because we're still only a quarter through, and we're seeing, or our project developers are continuing to bring us good opportunities. Even if we were not able to complete all of justice for this year, which I don't think is a likely scenario at all, I think that it would be too early to adjust our guidance at this point.
Okay, thanks. And I also have a question on your backlog. How much is for execution in 2010, and how do you see the backlog development going into the second quarter?
Yeah, so our backlog is divided between seismic and geologic products. If you look year on year at the backlog change, the main reason why it has decreased from first quarter of 2009 is because we've been working off some very long-term well log underwriting projects, and that's the main reason for the decrease year on year. the total backlog is not, I would probably characterize out of the $107 million that we have in backlog, you're probably looking at something like, 70 to 80% of that would be accomplished this year. The rest would be past the end of this year.
And how do you see the backlog development? Obviously, we are quite well into the second quarter already. Has it increased from the levels you have seen at end of Q1? Or?
Yes, we expect it to increase. I mean, keep in mind that backlog is not only just pre-funding before we start a project, but it's also late sales that we obtain as we're completing a project. And so it depends on how our late sales develop on some of our newer surveys, like our White Asthma surveys and some of our West Africa 3D. I don't want to comment on our backlog and going forward yet. It's just still too early for me to make a call on that just yet, just near term.
Okay, and the final question. There seems to be quite a lot of optimism among the contract players that seismic data rates is set to increase in the second half of 2010 or early 2011. How you see the market? Do you share this view, or if you can add some color on what you think about the contract market?
Sure. I mean, we're not exposed to the contract market from the standpoint of bidding for oil companies for contract work. Where we do get an impression of developments in the contract market is participating as a buyer of vessel capacity. And I work constantly in discussion with vessel vendors in regards to projects that we're developing. They're in the development phases to look at availability of capacity for those projects. I think I can confirm that those vessel vendors are trying to push up prices. The negotiations are a little bit tougher and go on a little bit longer than they were a year ago about this time. We have not taken on any new capacity. I mean, the capacity that we have got in place right now. We've had in place since the latter part, mid part of 2009. So we're the capacity that we're currently using was signed on at very attractive rates. And that capacity, as we've communicated before, is sufficient to complete our guidance for 2010, our investment guidance. So I guess I would just characterize that, yes, I see evidence that contractors are trying to push up their rates. I don't necessarily, I can't confirm that they're actually achieving those higher rates. But I also would point out that we still see a number of high capacity 3D vessels that are left to be put out in the market in 2010 and early 2011. And one would assume that those would continue to put some moderate pressure on the top side of the ability of vessel providers to increase their rates.
Okay, thank you very much.
We will now take a question from Christopher Mollerken of Arctic Securities. Please go ahead.
And good morning. On this survey where you have moved the White Asthmet crew to in the Gulf of Mexico, could you elaborate a bit regarding the pre-funding level on this survey and also the size of the survey? How large is the new one?
Yeah, where we've moved the vessel is to acquire White Asthmet data. As we've been, I guess since the beginning of 2008, we've been in sort of the Mississippi Canyon Atwater Valley area of the Gulf of Mexico, acquiring White Asthmet data as part of our Freedom, Liberty projects, and then Justice. This the project area that we've moved the vessel to is adjacent to that data, but it's outside of the oil spill area. So the strategy is to grow our data coverage within the same area, and the data is contiguous to data we've already acquired, so it'll be seamless to the White Asthmet data that we've already acquired. in regards to, you know, we're not quite prepared to formally announce that project yet for competitive reasons. So therefore we haven't come out with and to be honest with you, it's a project we've had on planning stages. We've had it to a certain stage in project planning, and because of the incident, we've had to move it forward a little bit quicker than what we had originally intended. I mean, this is a project that we had hoped to start later in the year. It's got significant customer interest, I can tell you that, but we don't really talk about pre-funding on a project-by-project basis, so I can't comment on that.
But is it fair to assume that since you sort of like pre-started it now in May instead of, say, August, that you had originally planned to sell in more pre-funding, you know, during this early summer time, so you start off with a little bit lower pre-funding than what you would usually plan for?
I don't think that's necessarily true to say. Again, we would rather have, you know, started it later. We've started it a bit earlier than what we had planned. We are in an area that, as I've talked about earlier in this conference call, this is probably one of the more productive areas of the Gulf of Mexico, and the area that we have the boat shooting now is no different than that. It's an area we're very confident in, and we'll just leave it at that.
Yep. If you say that you don't return to justice in the near future, how long do you expect this white azimuth operation to continue in the new area?
Well, I think if for some reason the restricted area that's currently in place over the Justice area is lifted, if the oil spill can be capped, and the reason why we've moved out of the Justice area is there's an active effort now to deploy chemical dispersants onto the water surface, and those chemical dispersants are not exactly safe. If those efforts were to stop, it's our intention to get back to justice as soon as possible. There's several reasons for that. I mean, obviously, we've acquired slightly over 50% of the area. We're currently processing the data now that we've acquired. I mean, how we acquire these surveys is in a way that we can assure that we have as much contiguous data as possible, so we can go ahead and get started on processing. And in fact, you know, we're of the greater than 50% of the area that we've acquired on Justice, we're currently processing that now, and we'll be delivering intermediate products to customers, you know, on the schedule that we had always planned. So we would like to do these projects in an orderly manner, and so it's our intention as soon as the restricted area is lifted, or the restriction on the area is lifted, then we're going to get back to justice as soon as possible so we can continue that project.
Just to rephrase the question then, regardless of when you return to justice, when do you expect that the acquisition of justice and the new one, which have just started, will be completed?
Yeah, so if we were to get back to justice today, I would say that we would probably be on schedule, you know, barring any other operational interruptions or anything, we'd probably be on schedule to finish justice sometime in early Q3. The project that we're working on right now, I'm not quite certain of that deadline, of the size and how long it would take us to complete that, Christopher. So unfortunately, I can't give you that answer. I'm sorry.
Okay, but I guess I heard you saying that you don't need further capacity now to reach your investment guidance for 2010. So that seems to be up versus the Q4 call when you said you expected to charter in more capacity to meet that 2010 investment guidance.
No, when I the Q4 call, Christopher. You're correct. I did say that my intention was that we would need to charter in some additional minor 2D vessel capacity to achieve that investment guidance. You know, 2D vessel capacity on a short-term basis that we currently didn't have. But in terms of of 3D vessel capacity, as you're aware, you know, I guess after our Q4 announcement, we exercised our first option with the Polaris Nadia. So, and then we have a second option that we can exercise should we choose, and that would take us into 2011. So, in terms of 3D capacity, between what we've already signed plus the options, we have what we need to achieve our investment guidance.
And Q2 versus Q1, the only difference there is this Chinese vessel coming off charter.
Yeah, the BGP Pioneer came off charter in early Q2, that's correct.
Q1 was obviously a great quarter for you. Was it, however, in line with management expectations, since you didn't send out any positive profit warning early April?
Yes, it was in line with our expectations.
Thank you.
We will now take a question from James Redfern of Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Robert. James here from Merrill Lynch. Can I just ask a couple of questions? Firstly, the EBIT margin of 40% in the first quarter, is that lower due to an increase in the mix between pre-funding and late sales, if you like? So more pre-funding and lower late sales, is that right?
I think it could be characterized by the fact that we saw, 73% of our revenues in Q1 were on some of our existing projects that we're working on right now, which are, I guess the mix is a little bit more heavily weighted towards 3D, large 3D projects that we're conducting in frontier basins, which typically carry, slightly higher amortization rates. They also carry higher pre-funding rates, so therefore, the higher pre-funding rate that we recognized in Q1 versus guidance is a factor in that as well.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you. And then secondly, just following on from the question earlier about day rates for vessels. Can you quantify it all in terms of what sort of price increases the vessel owners are seeking at the moment, compared to maybe 6 months ago?
No, I just know that there is a lot of they're getting a bit bolder in the negotiations. There's a lot of haggling.
Yeah, I can imagine.
And in demand, I can say that they are, as you see them report, they're a lot of the capacity in the busy North Sea summer season has been taken up with proprietary projects by oil companies. So it's understandable that they're trying to push up their day rates.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, but I can't really quantify it on a percentage basis now.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. And then lastly, just in terms of the Gulf of Mexico licensing rounds in August and then March again next year, do you in your sort of opinion, do you think that the level of bidding activity is going to be far lower than in previous years, just given what we've seen in the Gulf of Mexico in the last 2 weeks and potentially increased regulation and development costs in the area?
I think it's too early to tell. I mean, we don't know what regulation might occur as a result of this incident. In our discussions with customers in the past 2 weeks since the incident, there's no indication to me that they're changing any of their medium to long-term exploration plans in the region. Let's keep in mind that when an oil company goes out there and licenses or picks up a block in one of these license rounds, they have 10 years, to be able to explore that block out in the deep water. So these projects are very long-term projects, and I don't see those plans or those sorts of horizons being altered by this incident.
Okay, Rob. Okay, thanks a lot for that.
Sure.
Our next question comes from Tor Lunder of DNB North. Please go ahead.
Hi. Most of my questions have been answered, but one more question to vessel capacity. If you see kind of vessel rates starting to increase for, say, early 2011, would you consider now to take a vessel, or and what kind of vessel, if you should take a vessel, on a more long-term contract, say 1 to 2 years, without having a project pipeline for the vessel?
I certainly wouldn't do that now. I mean, we would look at opportunities like we did with Polarcus to negotiate option periods, you know, where we have options that would take us out. You know, in that particular agreement, we have you know, options that take us out to a year in addition to the original charter period that we had, which I guess was about 5 months. You know, we're always looking for opportunities to do that. You know, I think we're not there yet, Tor, in terms of our where we would feel like we need to lock in a vessel for a longer period of time where we don't have you know, where we don't necessarily have definite projects lined up for it. I just don't think we're there yet. It's hard to tell when we're going to be there as well. Just have to see how things materialize, particularly in the fourth quarter of 2010.
Thanks. And one more question on possible new projects. Based on your figures today, it seems like you had extremely high pre-funding in West Africa. Is that the kind of level you would require to do a new project as well, or was this very special?
You know, pre-funding levels, you know, change on a project-by-project basis, dependent upon what are, you know, the block that we're shooting or the area that we're shooting, and what, you know, we anticipate our go-forward sales forecast would be, or our late sales forecast would be. It, you know, I guess, you know, typically where, you know, in the Gulf of Mexico, where you might have, you know, 50 customers, 60 to 70 customers interested in one of our large surveys, just because of the activity there and because of the small block sizes, you know, we'd be willing to do projects, you know, for lower pre-funding rates in an area like the Gulf of Mexico, because we have a more visibility on higher late sales, I guess, more confidence on higher late sales. Whereas in West Africa, where you know, the blocks tend to be bigger and the players tend to be fewer, we look for projects that might carry higher pre-funding. And I think that you're seeing the effect of that in Q1, but it would change on a project-by-project basis. I mean, it depends on the pre-funding company. It depends on the country that we're operating in, you know, a number of factors.
Yeah, and what is the activity like among the oil companies now for new projects? If you look outside of the U.S. Gulf of Mexico, are there any new exciting areas like the one you're acquiring at the moment in West Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still a lot of additional potential left for TGS in West Africa. You know, even outside of you know, we've been very active in Liberia. You know, there are that entire play, you know, extends from Sierra Leone really all the way through Ghana, and we would be looking at potentially new projects, you know, to chase that play. You know, without, I don't want to tip my hand any more than that in other areas, you know, to my competition. I think that we're enthusiastic about the Arctic, you know, through our experiences in Greenland. But there are other parts of the Arctic that we're looking to, you know, as potential attractive areas for TGS. You know, I think those are the sort of the regions that come to my mind as sort of growth areas, you know, going forward for us that are attractive.
Okay, thank you.
John Elson of Carnegie asks our next question. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, Houston. A couple of questions from Oslo here. Firstly, on, funding on the Justice. If you're not able to complete the survey, how does it actually work, the commitments? Are the oil companies able to pull out if the survey is not 100% complete, or do they have to pay up 50% of the commitment if 50% of the survey is finalized?
Yeah, so the oil companies would have to pay for the data that's been acquired and processed to date. They can't pull out of that. In addition, we don't put really any kind of deadlines within our licenses, which would allow them to pull out if the project is necessarily delayed.
Okay, so there's no cash risk for that for the part of the investments that are already been carried out in terms of
that's funding. Correct. That's correct.
And the White Estimate crew that you have at the moment, for how long have you committed those vessels? Is it late June?
We have those vessels committed until we finish the project. There's not a hard deadline on that.
So how does that actually work? If the oil spill lasts for another six months, do you have the whole crew ready available for you for the next 6 months, and then after that until they finalize the Justice?
That's getting a little bit long out there. We would have to do some more. That would have to be matters between TGS and Western GECO about how to plan that, and it's still too early. We're planning on getting back to Justice well before that sort of time horizon.
Yeah, but I guess every day that you're not able to work on Justice now means another day of renting the whole crew. Are you renting at the same rate as you had originally for Justice, or is it a markup for this?
No. We're still paying the same rate as we were for Justice. Keep in mind that we're also acquiring. We're not just sitting there in suspension. I mean, we're acquiring White Azimuth data now, adding to our library. So we're investing in our data library now before we get back to Justice.
Yeah. And can you confirm that the area where you're shooting now is an area that you had planned to shoot anyway, or so it's just an emergency?
It was on. Like I said before, we were planning to get there at some point. We just had to get there a little bit earlier than what we had preferred.
All right, excellent. And in general, there have been a lot of White Azimuth multi-client service in the Gulf of Mexico over the last few years. Most of those crews are now coming off operations. What do you think in general? Will the industry continue to have 2 to 4 big White Azimuth multi-client crews or crews shooting multi-client data in the Gulf of Mexico for the next couple of years, or will there be less multi-client activity in the Gulf of Mexico for the next couple of years?
Well, it's... You rightly point out that Deepwater Gulf of Mexico is rapidly getting covered with White Azimuth data. Companies are looking at new technology now. We've been shooting White Azimuth since 2003 in the Deepwater Gulf of Mexico, and so companies are already starting to think about what's the next step. Some of those thoughts, I think, also involve multi-vessel crews like White Azimuth. It's still too early those technologies are still in the early stages of thought and development, I think. But, I think there are other plays around the world where you're starting to see, White Azimuth being adopted, such as West Africa, the subsalt plays, for example, in Angola. Of course, those are... to date, those projects have been proprietary projects for oil companies, not multi-client. But obviously, if White Azimuth gets picked up in those new basins, then that's where a lot of the capacity might go.
Yeah. Are you considering doing White Azimuth outside of the Gulf of Mexico in the near term or the foreseeable future?
Potentially, at some point, we might. Not near term.
Yeah. And then on the 2010 guidance, if I just take the Q1 numbers and multiply it by 4, I get up at around 600, the high end of your range. And we know that historically Q1 has been the weakest quarter of the year. Did you expect Q1 Q1 to be an extraordinarily strong quarter, or could there be some risk of upside in the guidance?
Well, we expected it to be a big quarter because of the pre-funding revenue recognized. We knew, and you know, we communicated in our Q4 earnings release that you know our investments were going to be pretty heavy early in the year versus late in the year. You know, with our vessel schedule, so we expected to recognize quite a bit of pre-funding revenues in the first quarter. So it's in it. You know, Q1 was in accordance with our plan.
I see that. And for the second quarter of this year, the total multi-client investment level should be roughly similar as Q1. Is that correct, or and then less multi-client investments for the second half of the year? Or have just roughly the spread over the 2010?
If you look at you know, and unfortunately I didn't include it in the earnings release this time. We have a you know, we publish a vessel schedule, and it's in our. That's in our Q4 earnings release that you can go to. And so you can see our vessel commitments and when we have those on charter and coming off charter. And, you know, early Q2, we had the BGP Pioneer come off charter. It was working Deepwater Liberia for us. So that project's complete. But, I, you know, and to address your question, I'd go back to that Q4 earnings release where we had the vessel schedule. That has not changed. And I guess... you know, we've taken that first option on the Polarcus vessels. So we'll have that vessel into the fall, early winter of 2010. But as I you know stated before, should we get back to Justice, we should be done with that project in the summertime.
When do you expect to secure capacity for 2011? Vessel capacity for 11?
Well, I mean, we're talking to vessel vendors now about projects that we can see occur in 2011. So I would say that, you know, should we pull a trigger on one of these projects that we're working on right now, it could be pretty quick that we start securing vessel capacity for 2011.
Yeah. And my final question is in terms of revenues for like the medium term compared to investments. Including 2010, your multi-client investments have been roughly almost $300 million 3 years in a row, and you have a target of generating $2.5 to $3 in revenues for every dollar invested, which should mean that your multi-client revenues should be in the range $750 to $900 at some point, instead of high $500 where you are now. Okay, so could you give some comments on that? Is it fair to assume that sales multiple has been coming down?
I think lately we've been guiding that, you know, when we evaluate our projects, we typically look for 2 to 2.5 times return on our projects. So it's a little bit, you know, I think that's where we tend to be, you know, sort of evaluating things right now, 2 to 2.5 times return on projects.
Right, that's everything for me. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, John.
Our next question comes from Morten Nystrøm of Fearnley Funds. Please go ahead.
Hi, Robert. It's Morten here from Fearnley Funds. A lot of my questions have been answered, but I have a question regarding actually Petroleum Geoservices GeoStreamer. As far as I know, you are the only company except from PGS that have been acquiring a multi-client project with the GeoStreamer. What are TGS view on the technology, and is it a significant improvement for capturing these low frequencies frequency data?
I mean, we've had experience with GeoStreamer in projects that we've joint ventured with, you know, done as a joint venture with PGS, both in the Gulf of Mexico as well as in the Norwegian North Sea, in the North Viking Graben. The technology makes sense. We have, you know, I think my opinion is that, you know, the biggest advantage to GeoStreamer is, you know, efficiency improvements due to your ability to tow the streamer deeper and therefore stay in production longer through bad weather periods. And so it's operational in nature, I guess I would characterize it. Theoretically, it seems to be good technology. I can't really comment on data quality, in terms of GeoStreamer versus other, just conventional streamers.
Okay, just a follow up question on that. You're now doing a joint venture project with PGS in the North Sea for this season. Are you seeing any, let's say, change in oil companies' interest level on multi-client project with the GeoStreamer, especially in mature areas, compared to project with conventional streamers?
Yeah, I can't comment on that. I'll just say that we have not announced any joint venture acquisition with PGS for this season yet. The joint venture that we've done in the Nordfiken Graben was in 2009, the summer season. So that data has been processed and delivered to clients. But we haven't announced anything in 2010 yet. I'd rather not comment on sort of a pickup or what customers believe, in terms of GeoStreamer versus conventional streamer. I think it's probably best that you talk to those oil companies.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Martin.
We now have a question from Todd Skoll of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Robert. Most of my questions have been asked, but I wanted to talk to you about the cross-selling opportunities you were seeing between GPS and your other businesses.
Yeah.
Have you seen significant? Have you been seeing a significant pickup in the cross-selling opportunities?
I think our geological products and services group, which is what we call GPS, it's it is composed of our well log division, our well log data library division, and then we also have an interpretation group as well that's part of our GPS group. The whole idea, we acquired both businesses in the past, and the whole idea is we've always seen those as very complementary to our has been our core business, which is seismic data library. The well log business is a business that is obviously complementary from the standpoint of its information that is publicly available, but what TGS is able to do is enhance the value of that data by capturing it and making it available in an easily deliverable form, i.e. online, right? I mean, oil companies can get online and download very high-end well log data products. That data is, oil companies use that data sort of hand-in-hand with seismic information. In order to understand and interpret seismic information, you need to know something about the rocks. And so our well log data library gives our customers the ability to make that tie to aid in their interpretation. What we did in terms of acquiring our interpretation capabilities is we've recognized that we needed that expertise to be able to tie those two data types together. And what's even more impressive is the ability to provide sort of interpretive products to oil companies that link those data types together to help them sort of take a leap forward in terms of reducing risk, particularly in frontier basins. So in Q1, we announced that we started a project in the Browse Basin off the west coast of Australia, that has followed, on the heels of very successful projects in Brazil, in the Santos Campos and Espírito Santo basins of Brazil. And so oil companies, as they're going into these basins, let's say that they haven't worked there or they don't have a lot of history there, they can immediately come in and sort of leapfrog into a frontier basin by bundling both well log and seismic information along with and tying all that together with interpretive products. So that's kind of the synergies that we see, between GPS and our seismic business.
Can you talk about where the different geographies are that you cover in terms of your geological products and services well log library?
Yeah. Well log library. Our biggest strengths have been obviously the Gulf of Mexico, but we have in the past 2 years been extremely active in capturing well log information and well data in the Rockies. All of the resource plays in the U.S., including and we've been getting into the East Coast and the Marcellus play. So. Actually, to date, where we have well log data library around the world is in about 24 countries. So, but I guess I'd characterize our strengths has been in our core areas of the lower 48 and Gulf of Mexico. We've seen a huge pickup in oil company interest in getting what we call LAS logs, which are the actual digits versus just images of well logs, and oil companies can use the digital LAS well logs to do high-end petrophysical work that's particularly needed in order to assess these resource plays in the U.S. and elsewhere, for that matter, around the globe. I mean, oil companies are now starting to develop some of these shale plays and resource plays in international markets as well.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Egle Domacic of Terra Markets. Please go ahead.
Hello. Thank you for taking my questions. I have three of them. First of all, absent of this rig accident in the Gulf of Mexico, would you have maybe increased your guidance for 2010? And secondly, could you give an indication of how much have you spent on the Justice project? And thirdly, do you have any plans for your for utilizing your cash, maybe raising multi-client investments further or acquiring some assets, or still you think it's a good time to wait and see how the market develops with all this cash in hand?
Yeah. So your first question, if the incident, the Deepwater Horizon incident, hadn't happened, would we have adjusted our guidance? And I would say no. I mean, Q1 was according to plan for the company, and we built our guidance going into 2010 according to that plan. So I would say no, that we probably would have not adjusted our guidance. In terms of the amount spent on Justice, I can't really comment on an individual project basis, on our investment on a project-by-project basis, but I will just characterize that before our operations were interrupted on Justice, we were slightly over 50% complete with acquisition and something less than that on processing. So, I would say, over the entire investment plan for Justice, we were something slightly less than 50% of our investment in that project, and before we've seen this temporary suspension. In terms of cash utilization, we went into 2010 with $245 million in cash going into 2010. The board in our February meeting evaluated our plans for that cash, and in doing that we did some pretty detailed modeling on what our 2010 and even going forward plan was going to be in terms of investing in projects, and the board felt very comfortable that in addition to having sufficient cash to take advantage of new projects going forward, that we could afford to return more of that cash back to our shareholders. I mean, we've had in the past few years, we've had the policy of buying back our shares, so we've been pretty active in buying back shares in the past. In our February meeting, the board announced that they were authorizing management to buy back another $30 million worth of shares in 2010. So the board's intention is for us to continue to return value back to shareholders during the year. But in addition, they felt like they felt it was time for the board to propose to our shareholders to start a dividend policy. And earlier in the call, we reiterated that the shareholders will vote on June 3rd on that proposal for a total of 4 kroner per share in dividend within 2010, two of those being a non-recurring dividend. The remainder of the cash that we have and that we'll continue to have, we feel it's prudent to keep a pretty healthy cash balance to enable us to take advantage of both new organic growth through new projects, but as well we look for M&A opportunities, and those M&A opportunities can be opportunistic purchases of other companies' data libraries where they might be looking to divest of some of those data libraries, and we look at opportunities pretty frequently to do that. And in addition, we've historically been pretty active in the M&A front to pick up niche technologies where we see those technologies adding value to our core business, and we'll continue to look for those opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Do you see those opportunities now, for instance, for data libraries in the market?
Yeah, I mean we've been looking at opportunities recently to do that.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Alex Brooks of UBS. Please go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen, thank you for taking my question. One query I have is I noticed that the vintages of surveys in 2007 and 2008, the book value on those actually hasn't dropped very much over, in both cases, actually about 12 months. And I wonder if you could comment on the likelihood of those surveys starting to pick up in terms of volume. I mean, I don't recall what the content of those surveys was then, and obviously it's been reflected in a number of questions already talking about the rising proportion of your earnings coming from the 2009 and 2010 vintage work.
Right. Yeah, so, we did sell, we had a proportion of our revenues in Q1 that came from our 2007-2008 data library. So we continue to see sales of that data library. I'd also point out that those vintages of library are still below the minimum, are still below the maximum net book value that we're allowed to carry at the end of 2010. So there's no on a portfolio basis, those vintages are not in danger of any kind of major impairment this year. So we still see continued interest. Again, you're correct that lately we've had a lot of interest in some of our newer technologies and newer 3Ds and some of our work in progress, our more recent data. But we continue to see interest in the 2007-2008 surveys.
If I just sort of ask the question more broadly, I mean, it's been a trend over the last couple of years that it's been the newer surveys that have really driven your sales performance. I remember about 18 months ago, it was a big focus of the market as to whether there would be a significant shift in the value of those older surveys as the move into wide azimuth came in. We've all kind of stopped talking about that, but could you sort of give us your view on the level of interest and whether you think that's going to come back?
Yeah, so none of the surveys that we're discussing in 2007, 2008, those are still modern surveys with modern technology. I mean, we weren't in the wide azimuth game back at that point. Well, I mean, yeah, we actually started in the wide azimuth game in 2008, but none of those projects that were completed in 2007 and 2008 were wide azimuth. They're all, narrow azimuth 3D data sets that have not yet, have not been overshot to a large extent by wide azimuth. So they're not obsolete by any stretch of the imagination. We're still, and to take that even further, I'd point out that even some of our narrow azimuth data that we ourselves have overshot with wide azimuth data is still probably one of our more popular products. So, you know, there's different price points to traditional 3D data and even 2D data, even under existing and new wide azimuth data. I'd characterize that some of the 2008 vintage were maybe in more gassy plays in the Gulf of Mexico. As we all know, gas prices has suffered quite a bit, and I think we've seen a period of time, particularly in the financial crisis of late 2008-2009, we saw a lot of smaller players that were traditionally active in the Gulf of Mexico shelf in those gas plays really sort of pull back in the financial crisis. We're starting to see evidence that those guys are starting to come back. So, we're hopeful that some of those more gas-prone project areas will pick up.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
We will now take a follow-up question from Paul Dahl of First Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking this last question. When you gave the guidance, you said that oil companies are looking to increase their E&P spending by 5-8% in 2010. What do you think is needed to allow the oil companies to overspend on their initial budgets this year?
What do I think is needed for them to overspend their initial budgets?
Yes. I think we saw from the period 2005 to 2008, including 2007, that oil companies continuously overspent. I think it was due to inflation as well as their cash flow turned out better than initially expected.
Yeah. I suppose you'd see the same effect in 2010 as you saw back then as well. You know, I mean, if we see continued support in commodity prices to bolster the balance sheet of our customers, I suspect that they would continue to reinvest in exploration.
Sounds very good. Thank you.
Any more questions?
We have no more questions at the moment.
Well, thank you very much for attending today, and we look forward to talking to you in August in our Q2 earnings release. Bye-bye.
That will conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation, ladies and gentlemen. You may now disconnect.